Today we begin our 33rd week of our 4.5 year journey through all of God's inspired word, verse by verse. We are still in the books of Moses. We're in Leviticus chapter number 21. We're going to start with verse 7 today. I remind you that the book of Leviticus is a rule book for the Levites, for the Levitical tribe, for the priests and for the support personnel who are working in and around the tabernacle. So it has a lot of the details about which sacrifices to offer, in which way, at what time, and how to go through certain ceremonies and procedures. But it also has some of the things that the Israelites as a whole should be doing, because the Levites are going to be kind of the arbitrators, to make sure that the rest of the tribes do the right thing according to these procedures. Now, in Leviticus 21, we're talking about the special case of the Aaronic family and how they have to have a much higher standard than any other families within the nation of Israel. And that's because they represent God to the people and the people to God. So one of the ways that they are held to a higher standard is in their marriages. So verse number 7 of Leviticus 21 tells us, "They," meaning any priest, "shall not take a woman who is profaned by harlotry." So that means anyone that at any time in their history was acting as a paid sex worker. Or another meaning or shade of meaning to this word here is someone who was known to be kind of wild in their youth. So somebody that had loose sexual morals. A priest is not supposed to marry someone like that. They're supposed to marry someone with high moral standards from early on in their life. Continued, "Nor shall they take a woman divorced from her husband, for he is holy to his God." So divorce, there are acceptable reasons for getting divorced. That wouldn't matter in this case. The high priest, the priestly family members were not supposed to be marrying anyone that was divorced for whatever reason, because they're supposed to represent in as pure a form as possible, God to the people and people to God. Now, we know historically that a lot of these rules that we're talking about right now were not carried through with the priests. So we're only talking about the standards that were set out for them, not necessarily what they practiced. Verse number 8. "You shall consecrate him, therefore, for he offers the food of your God. He shall be holy to you, for I am he who sanctifies you, am holy." So the high priest, the priestly family members are supposed to be higher standard because, as I keep repeating, these priests represent God to the people and the people to God. It even affects their minor children. Verse 9. "Also, the daughter of any high priest or any priest, if she profanes herself by harlotry, she profanes her father, she is to be burned with fire." Now, this is actually a penalty that was assessed anyway. If somebody were caught in the act of harlotry, that is practicing sex work that was illegitimate in the plan that God had with one man to one woman for a lifetime, they were to be executed because they were violating God's original intention for sex, which was to bind the couple together physically and psychologically. So what's being brought out here is not so much this was the special penalty for his daughter if she gets caught in this act. It is basically there will be no exceptions to the normal rule. He doesn't get a pass for his daughter because he's priest. Verse 10, the priest who is the highest among his brothers, on whose head the anointing oil has been poured, and who has been consecrated to wear the garments, shall not uncover his head, nor tear his clothes, nor shall he approach any dead person, nor defile himself, even for his father and mother, nor shall he go out of the sanctuary, nor profane the sanctuary of his God, for the consecration of the anointing of his oil of his God is on him. I am he who is. Now this, I think, is missed by some people. We're not talking about he can't go to funerals ever. We're talking about something we've already mentioned before. While the 7 to 8 days of the ceremony of ordination is happening, the priest, and specifically the high priest in this passage, cannot stop the process in order to participate in a funeral, even for his mom and dad or any other close relative. He has to finish the procedure of the ordination, because that takes priority. Because, as I keep saying, he is supposed to be representing God to the people and the people to God. So that takes priority. Now, if he's already been through that process and his mom or dad or one of his kids or his brother or sister or somebody else, and we have kind of this list elsewhere that's close to him, if they pass away, he can take time off from his work then in order to be part of this grieving process. But while the anointing oil is on him, meaning he's going through his ordination service, he can't make that exception. And that's, by the way, that's what happened in Aaron's case. Remember that? It was on the 8th day of the process, and his sons were executed, and he was grief-struck, but he could not be part of the burial service for those two sons, no matter how much he loved them, because he had not yet finished the procedure of ordination. Okay, verse number 13, some more of the special rules regarding the priests, specifically the high priest. He shall take a wife in her virginity. So that means he doesn't marry someone who's widowed. That comes up in the next. Or divorced or anything like that. He needs to have a wife that's never been with another man, because that goes along with the symbolism of him being the person who represents God to the people and people to God. A widow or a divorced woman or one who is profaned by harlotry, these he may not take, but rather he must marry a virgin of his own people, so that he will not profane his offspring among his people, for I am he who is, who sanctifies him. So that's the way it's supposed to work for the priests. Now, historically, we know that there was some controversy about this that took place in the period of time between the Old Testament and the New Testament. There were some people who objected to certain priests serving because they did not have a wife who was a virgin. And that is just a pragmatic application of this passage. Leviticus 21:16. Then he who is spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron, saying, no man of your offspring throughout their generation who has a defect shall approach to offer the food of his God. Now, this is where we get into, again, this idea that they're supposed to represent the people to God, God to the people, and therefore they have to have a very high standard. The word defect here is explained more readily in the words that follow. And effectively, and we'll see this as the context continues, the high priest, the priests, were supposed to be the same standard as the sacrifices they were offering. So no clear physical problems. Verse 18, for no one who has a defect shall approach, a blind man. So if he's blind, he would, if he were an animal, he would not be allowed to be offered as a sacrifice. So as a priest, he can't offer the sacrifice either. So Eli, the high priest in the days when Samuel was born, could not function any longer as an active duty priest because he was blind. His sons were doing all the work. Or a lame man, meaning there is something wrong with his ability to walk. Or he who has a disfigured face or any deformed limb. Now, the wording here is a little bit uncertain as to what's in mind, I think, with the English. But it's a little bit more specific in the Hebrew and then again into the Greek. The word here is for the first word in this last phrase is about a slit nose, meaning probably something like a cleft palate issue, where the process of gestation, the baby does not finish the completion of growing the two sides of the face together. So you end up with this cleft that goes from the nostril on one side or the other, sometimes both actually, down through the lip area. So if a priest is born into the priestly families in that fashion, he cannot do active duty. It would not be allowed. The second word that appears here is something about the ears in the Greek text, meaning something is wrong with their ears. Something malformed. It might be with the pinna, the outside fleshy portion of the ear doesn't look right. Here's another historical thing that happened. There was a time in the history shortly before Herod became the king of the Jews that one priest bit off the earlobe of another priest when he was giving him a greeting hug, because by doing that, he triggered this verse and made it impossible for that guy to function as a priest anymore. And so the biter became the replacement for the bitee. So that's kind of rough, right? Very strange history. Or verse 19, a man who has a broken foot or a broken hand. So this might be a temporary thing. The priest might break a bone or body part, and at least as long as that's being repaired, provided it does not repair in some deformed fashion. As long as it repairs into a nice, normal-looking hand or foot or arm or leg, they'll be able to go back to practice the active duty priest work once that's repaired. Verse 20, or a hunchback, so somebody that's got either a genetic deformity so that they've got this hunching of the back, or possibly they might experience something like osteoporosis later, where they're bent over constantly. Or a dwarf, something that happens genetically that causes the body not to grow to the proper proportions. So anyone born into the priestly family, any male born into the priestly family that has a problem along these areas would not be allowed to do active duty work as a priest. They would do some support work, but they could not offer sacrifices. Because the rule of thumb here is, if an offering animal could not be given because of some sort of problem, the same problem in the priest offering a sacrifice would also apply. Or someone who has a defect in his eye, maybe we're talking about something like one eye has got scaling that happens on it, or maybe pink eye, or some issue that shows clearly there's something wrong with that eye. Or eczema, so a skin problem, or scabs. All of those could happen on a temporary basis just to disqualify them for a while. In fact, that eczema and scabs, that's been referred to in testing for leprosy, that you wait for a week to see whether or not it goes away. And if it does, then it was just eczema, or it was just a scab, or and so it was no longer disqualifying when it came to the idea of the mark of leprosy. So the same thing here with the priests. Or crushed testicles. If I were translating this, I'd probably go more with or something wrong with their testicles, such as what the Greek has here. Remember, the Greek translation happened about 300 years before Jesus. And it was done by those who understood both Biblical Hebrew and Koine Greek, the common everyday use Greek. They put here one testicled. So somebody who had the testicles did not descend appropriately as they were maturing. So somebody like that would not be allowed to function as a hands-on priest. Verse 21, no man among the descendants of Aaron the priest who has a defect is to come near to offer he who is his offerings by fire. Since he has a defect, he shall not come near to offer the food of his God. Pay attention to verse number 22, though. He may eat the food of his God, both of the most holy and of the holy. Only he shall not go into the veil or come near the altar because he has a defect, so that he will not profane my sanctuaries, for I am he who is who sanctifies them. So it's exactly as I was explaining. These guys may have these situations from genetic problems that are not a fault of their own, or it may be a temporary issue that will only keep them out of the service for a little while. But it's all about the fact that those who go to the altar must be of the same standard in their own physical capabilities as the sacrifices they are offering. And they would still, even if they were disqualified temporarily or on a permanent basis, because they're part of the priestly families, they would have a right to eat of the sacrifices. The ones that were only partially burned up, the meat was still made available, the breads were still made available to the priestly members and the priest family members. And so they'd still have a right to eat of it, even of the holy things, because they are part of the priestly family. The only thing that we're talking about here is they must, in the service, match the things offered, the sacrifices, which must be holy. Verse 24, and so Moses spoke to Aaron and his sons and to all the sons of Israel. Let's go on to chapter 22 with some more rules for the priests. Then he who is spoke to Moses, saying, tell Aaron and his sons to be careful with the holy gifts of the sons of Israel, which they dedicate to me, so as not to profane my holy name. I am he who is. Say to them, if any man among you, all your descendants throughout your generations, approaches the holy gifts which the sons of Israel dedicate to he who is, while he is unclean, that person shall be cut off from before me. I am he who is. So now, again, we get to this idea that not only do they have to be bodily intact, they have to be ceremonially clean as well when they're doing this act of duty. If they blow that off, they will be cut off in the three levels that we've talked about before. They could find themselves temporarily shut out. They could find themselves excommunicated from the community of Israel, banished, we would say. Or if they're really insistent on causing this trouble, they could be executed. And that's the ultimate cutting off. That's bumping the case up to God's venue. Verse number 4, let's talk about some of the specifics that God has in mind as he speaks to Moses here. No man of the descendants of Aaron who is a leper, so if they are actively marked by the mark of leprosy, they should not be offering sacrifices. They should be being evaluated, or they should be out in the outside of the encampment, going through whatever process is necessary to get them free of that mark of leprosy. Or who has a discharge, meaning if they've got an active wound that's bleeding or has pus coming out of it, then they are ceremonially unclean. They should not be offering the sacrifices in that state. No man of the descendants of Aaron who is a leper who has a discharge may eat of the holy gifts until he is clean. So this is another standard in regard to the food issue that we were just talking about. They shouldn't be eating of those holy food items if they're currently unclean. They're supposed to be going through a special cleansing process. Or if one touches anything made unclean by a corpse, or if a man has a seminal emission. And we're going through here a list of some of the things earlier in the book of Leviticus that could make a person unclean. So being involved with a dead person's preparations for funeral, that could make you unclean. So you shouldn't be, as a priest, eating of the holy items, just like you shouldn't be offering the sacrifices during that time period in your life. Or if you've been sexually active, either intentionally or accidentally, as in a nocturnal emission. Verse 5, or if a man touches any teeming things by which he's made unclean, that means unclean animals, like geckos and things of that nature, or any man by whom he is made unclean, whatever his uncleanness. If a person who touches any such thing shall be unclean until evening and shall not eat of the holy gifts unless he's bathed his body in water. But when the sun sets, he will be clean, and afterward he shall eat of the holy gifts, for it is his food. So again, getting back to the whole process of dealing with uncleanliness standards for all of Israel. This was the procedure. Typically, if you came into contact with something that made you unclean, you had to go through a water ceremony, and then you had to wait at least until the new day started at sunset, and sometimes you had to wait for multiple days until you were declared clean again. Verse number 8, he shall not eat any animal which dies or is torn by beasts, becoming unclean by it. I am he who is. Now, we saw an exception earlier that Israelis could butcher out an animal that had died on its own. It had just fell over and died. Or maybe it got struck by lightning, for an example. As long as you as an Israeli went out there and cut its throat and tried to bleed it properly, then you could eat it, but because you didn't actively kill it by slitting its throat, you had to count that as making you unclean if you ate it. And you had to wait till the end of the day, wash your clothes and your body, and then you would be clean for the next day after eating that meal. That was not allowed for priests. Priests were not given that exception. Verse number 9, they shall therefore keep my charge so that they will not bear sin because of it and die therefore because they profane it. I am he who is, who sanctifies them. So the point is, priests are on a higher standard because they are constantly supposed to be representing the people to God and God to the people. Verse 10, no layman, and the word here has the sense of non-priest, a stranger, in the sense that we've been talking about. No non-priest, let's go with that, however, is to eat the holy gift. A sojourner with the priest or a hired man shall not eat of the holy gift. So we're talking about the sacrificial animals offered in the tabernacle ceremony by the priest. If the priest has visitors at his house, and they're not priests, they can't eat of that special food. because it's priest only, priestly family only. And that comes up in the next verse. If a priest buys a slave as his property with his money, that one may eat of it, and those who were born in his house may eat of it. So if he's got people who are paying back their debts, so they're in this slavery situation that we talked about, if the priest bought that guy's indebtedness contract, that makes him part of his household officially. So that indebted slave could eat of the food. If you've got somebody that's in that sort of contract and they have a kid born to them, then that child, even though they might be not from the priestly tribe, because they are part of the family by birth, then they would be allowed to eat of it. So we've got some very fine details here to help the Levites determine who can and cannot eat of the priestly food. If a priest's daughter is married to a non-priest, remember the layman idea, she shall not eat of the offering of the gifts, because you see, she's transferred from the priestly family to a non-priestly family the moment she got married. Verse 13, but if a priest's daughter becomes a widow or divorced and has no child and returns to her father's house as in her youth, she shall eat of her father's food, but no layman, no non-priest shall eat of it. So if the daughter got married outside of the priestly families, and then during that time she can't eat any of the special food when she visits mom and dad, but if her husband dies and she had no children by that husband, or she gets divorced from him and she has no children by that husband, then she is effectively transferred back to the family of her dad. And so after that, she can eat of the food. But if she has children from that other family, then she's still counted as part of that family. It's very fine-tuned stuff, but that's just the way that the Levitical books work. Well, we're out of time. We'll pick this up tomorrow.